New York City has begun to hand out prepaid debit cards to illegals. You cannot make this stuff up. We told you this was coming. This is a $53 million pilot program. If you came into the country illegally, congratulations, you hit the jackpot. Here's free money. Here's a free prepaid credit card. Have fun. Go on a shopping spree and imagine, like, let's say they commit violent crimes. Maybe then we should give them double. And what's amazing, this is supposed to save the taxpayers millions of dollars. Literally, that's what Eric Adams says. Only a Democrat could say that a $53 million expense at tax dollars where you're giving credit cards out to people who cross the borders, to illegal aliens, you can say that you're actually saving the taxpayers money. And here's what I think actually happened is that, you know, Eric Adams, he's letting all these hundreds of thousands of migrants, of illegals into the city. And somebody said to him, listen, they're illegal. They need a visa. You need to give them a visa. They're not allowed to be in the country without a visa. And Adam said, oh, a visa? Okay, that's a credit card, a Visa credit card. How about a MasterCard? How about a Discover and American Express? No, 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 not that kind of visa. You can't make it up. But you know what's even more laughable is what they're saying is they're only allowed to spend the money on these cards for certain expenses. They're not allowed to go to the racetrack. They're not allowed to go and bet on sports or on poker, right? So they're telling them you can only use these cards at bodegas or grocery stores or convenience stores, right? You can't just go and spend it on whatever you feel like spending it on, alcohol and cigarettes and drugs. So here's the question. How do they enforce it? Okay, they don't. They're literally using the honor system. I'm not kidding. They literally are telling people that it's a Visa card. They can go and do anything they want with it in theory. No, 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 no. That's breaking the rules. You're only allowed to use it at bodegas and groceries. Well, how do we enforce that? How do we make sure that happens? They have to sign a pledge. They're using the honor system. I mean, this is not the Babylon Bee. This is the actual news that I'm reading you here. Recipients have to sign a pledge promising that they will only use the cards to buy food and baby supplies. And how are they getting these programs? Where are they finding all the illegals to hand this out to? Again, not the Babylon Bee. They're handing them out at the Roosevelt Hotel, the Roosevelt Hotel in New York City, because that's where the majority of migrants are. That's their headquarters, where they begin before they get kicked out. So here's your free hotel stay and free debit cards. And the incredible thing is Adams is sitting there telling illegals, do not come to New York City because you're not going to like it here. New York City is a bad place for illegals to be, for migrants to be. And by the way, when I call them illegals, Biden calls them, you're wondering, how can I be so insensitive? How can I call them illegals? They're undocumented migrants. President Biden called them illegals. So I wouldn't want to go against a good woke liberal like President Biden. But it's just incredible. I mean, how they're rewarding people for breaking the law and attracting future illegals and saying, do not come to New York City, terrible place for illegals. But, you know, and it's saving the taxpayer dollars. This is what Eric Adams said. He said, we've been spending so much money on these illegals, handing them out this money. The scary part is he's probably right. It's probably true. They're spending a fortune giving them these free meals. And now they're saying, here, take the credit card, go to the bodega, buy the meal yourself. All right, so much to get to. Google has changed the definition of the word bloodbath. Literally, you can't make this up. Again, not the Babylon Bee. Google definitions, Google Dictionary. They changed the definition of the word bloodbath after the media humiliated itself. Remember the media mocking President Trump for talking about a bloodbath if Biden gets reelected? Google has changed the definition literally less than a week after the Trump fiasco, right? Because they used to use the literal definition and the symbolic definition. The word bloodbath is a very common metaphor. When people want to say that something bad happened on a mass scale, they call it a bloodbath. So literally, Google, they have the screenshot, the definition pre-Trump using the term and getting hammered for it. The definition there was that it can be symbolically, metaphorically refer to an unfortunate event that occurs to multiple people at once. For example, if auto workers get laid off, that's a bloodbath. Remember, that's the context Trump used it. Google gave a similar example. Google's example before they deleted it and erased it is a stock market bloodbath. Very good example, but Google literally now has removed that definition. Because then that would mean that Trump was correct in his usage of bloodbath. So now they only have the literal definition where it actually means a bloodbath. It actually means like a literal massacre. Do you know there's a national measles outbreak? And the media is barely talking about this, but this is very real. Not to get anybody nervous. I think the numbers are still pretty low, but there is a measles outbreak. Why is the media ignoring this? Remember when a couple of years ago there was a measles outbreak in Brooklyn and they decided to blame the Jews, even though that was actually fake news. It was not accurate, and the Jews were not the ones behind it, necessarily more than anybody else. But then it was a huge scandal. The media went berserk and it led to a lot of anti-Semitism. There were a few people in the Frum community who decided not to vaccinate for measles, and it wasn't true. It turns out that it was fake news because, yes, there was an outbreak in Brooklyn, but it was not a higher percentage than the rest of the country, and there's not a higher percentage of anti-vaxxers in the Frum community, but the media, of course, decided to blame the Jews. Now you have millions of illegals coming to the United States, and they're bringing measles and all sorts of other diseases. They're bringing tons of diseases, and remember, Trump got in trouble. He said that the illegals are poisoning the blood of this country, and that's what he meant. He meant because they're spreading diseases, yet the media is silent. All right, so much to get to. Another big win for Trump in the courts, this one involving the fraud trial, where Trump is falsely accused of inflating the price of Mar-a-Lago and other properties in order to secure loans from banks. So the Judge Engoron, who despises Trump, this Letitia James, of course, brought this lawsuit, and Judge Engoron, he fabricated the case. He literally made up numbers out of thin air. They were trying to force Trump to pay $464 billion just as a bond because his case is on appeal. So right now, Trump technically doesn't owe a dime. Yes, there's a ruling that he has to pay, but in that ruling, that number was literally made up. It was fabricated by this judge, a disgraceful judge, but somebody pointed out, anyway, an appeals court lowered that number that Trump had to give over as a bond to a much more affordable, and it's still a massive amount of money, $175 million, but for Trump, that's actually affordable, and he actually had that cash accessible to him, but half a billion, it is unheard of. There's like no bondholder that would ever do such a thing. And what's amazing is someone pointed out, they're calling this a victimless crime where Trump went and allegedly inflated the books. He did not. He actually undervalued Mar-a-Lago, but they're calling it a victimless crime. And somebody pointed out, you know, because basically the banks want the value inflated. Let's assume that Trump, worst case scenario, did actually inflate the value of these properties. He wanted to secure loans. The banks want that. The banks trusted him. They have never, ever defaulted on a payment. They've never been late on a payment or missed a payment. The Trumps are perfect, flawless when it comes to paying back their loans. The banks love them, so the banks have no problem with it. But they didn't. They did not inflate the value. They used the actual value, and so it wasn't a victimless crime. It was a victimless non-crime. Great point by somebody, I think, on Fox News, because Trump did not inflate the books. Also coming up, the United States refused to veto a UN resolution put forth by Russia and China calling for an unconditional ceasefire with Hamas, an unconditional and permanent ceasefire with Hamas. This is disgraceful. The United States has never been as hostile toward Israel as they are right now. Even under Obama, it was never this bad. We'll get to that. Rona McDaniel was hired by NBC News, former RNC chief, as an NBC News contributor. And just 2 or 3 days later, she has been fired after there was huge backlash, massive backlash from the entire on-air staff of NBC News, Chuck Todd, Joe Scarborough, a bunch of NBC News anchors. They were furious. They were livid and very, very public. And it's incredible because they're so blatant about their censorship of anybody Republican. Rona McDaniel, she's not some kind of MAGA conservative. Nobody views her as like some, you know, like a truly conservative Trump-supporting fanatic or anything like that. She's a moderate. Rona McDaniel is a moderate, and she's an establishment person. And for them to literally put so much pressure on the executives at NBC News that they fire Rona McDaniel, they are shamelessly admitting, wow, we want to censor anything and anybody that's Republican. We are totally leftist, totally biased. It's so blatant. And about censoring Republicans, they're not even trying to hide it. They're not even embarrassed about it. That's coming up. What else is going on here? A new name has been thrown into the mix for Trump's VP, for a Trump running mate, and that is Senator Marco Rubio. A thought occurred to me, and I think it would be an amazing, amazing choice. So we'll talk about that coming up. And a lot more. We got a lot of Israel news to get to. The president of Mexico is trying to blackmail President Biden, saying that if Biden does not cough up $20 billion in aid to Mexico, then he's going to keep sending millions of illegals across the border. You can't make this stuff up. See, so think about this. The Mexican president, he's trying to blackmail Biden. He wants money out of Biden. He wants Biden to send billions of dollars in funding, in aid to Mexico and other Latin American countries. He's saying, if you don't send the money, then I'm going to let illegals keep on flooding the border. And he's got it backwards. Biden wants the illegals. Biden wants the migrants. If you want to get money out of Biden, you have to threaten to stop sending illegals across the border. If you say, listen, President Biden, if you don't send me billions of dollars, I'm going to not let any illegals through. Oh, believe me, Biden's going to cough up that money in 2 seconds. You can't make it up. Mexican President Manuel López Obrador, he warned the United States that if they don't comply with his demands, the flow of migrants is going to keep on coming in droves. He had an interview with 60 Minutes, and Obrador, he reiterated his demand for $20 billion a year to Mexico. He also wants an end to the embargo on Cuba, and he wants amnesty for millions of Mexicans living in the United States. And he said, if they don't comply, then the flow of migrants will continue. And then Sharon Alfonsi, who asked him the questions, was interviewing him on 60 Minutes, said, well, that's blackmail. That's diplomatic blackmail. And he's basically said, well, too bad. You want to play the game? Play the game. Which, by the way, shows you who's in control. Because remember when it was Trump, it was the same Mexican president, Obrador. And when it was Trump, remember Trump said, listen, I'm going to shut down trading between our countries. You're going to get crushed. Your economy is going to get crushed. And everybody was freaking out, and the media and the Democrats, Trump's going to hurt the United States. Look how much damage he's going to do. We need Mexico. We need avocados and whatever nonsense they came up with. And Trump's like, listen, I got this. Don't worry. It's okay. He's going to cave in. Like, he has no choice. He needs us more than we need them. And of course, Mexico caved in, and it became Remain in Mexico, which was one of Trump's most successful border policies ever. And of course, Biden came in and promptly reversed that policy and shut it down, which was absurd. All right, RFK. I am enjoying this. RFK is creating huge, huge headaches and hassles and problems for the Biden campaign, because RFK is threatening to run as a third-party candidate. He's running, but he's got to get on the ballot. So it's not easy to get on the ballot. Of course, we know Ross Perot did it back in 1992. And if RFK, and usually there are third-party candidates, but they don't get enough traction, even if they're on the ballot. Nobody's really heard of them. They can't do a lot of damage. RFK has this huge, like, cult following, where a lot of people like him, and they don't even know, I think, what he stands for, but I think they just like his messaging. And obviously there's name recognition because of the name Kennedy, but I don't even think that's what it is, because it's like, okay, you know, the Kennedys are not relevant to politics. They have not been for 40 years. So RFK, if he gets on the ballot, doesn't have to be in 50 states. If he gets on the ballot in 7 swing states, in Georgia, in Michigan, Pennsylvania, you know the states, he could crush Biden's chances, and everybody recognizes this, you know, that if RFK is on the ballot, he does much more damage to Biden than he does to Trump. I mean, no comparison, because anybody, it's, you know, it's very simple. There's very few Trump voters out there who are going to say, you know what, I would vote for Trump, but I'll vote for RFK. But if RFK is not in the race, then I'm going to vote for Trump. If they're voting for Trump, it's because they want the real thing. It's because they want Trump. So are there a couple of people out there who say, listen, I don't want Biden, so I'm stuck with Trump. I'll vote for Trump. But if RFK is in the mix, I'll vote for RFK. But if RFK is not, then I'm going to vote for Trump. There's a handful, not many. But when it comes to Biden, I mean, all the people out there who are just gung-ho over RFK, they want an alternative to Biden. Trump's not on their radar. They're independents or even Democrats, and they're not voting, you know, for Trump. There's no chance, but they're stuck voting for Biden. And they say, listen, I'd rather vote for RFK because Biden's the worst president ever, but I'm disgusted by Trump. Those are the voters who are going to be voting for RFK. Trump voters, they want the real thing. So, you know, so are there a couple of Trump voters out there that they're upset about Trump's tweets, and they're upset about January 6th? They're upset that Trump told Russia to invade NATO countries if they don't pay up. There's a few, very, very few, you know, who are like Haley voters. That's the anomaly. But you know how many Democrats out there? You know how many millions of Democrats and independents? They cannot stand Biden. They're not voting for Trump. Trump's way off their radar. But they're stuck with Biden, and they'll vote for Biden, but they say, oh, RFK, I have a good alternative. Now, I was thinking, it makes no logical sense to vote. And by the way, the Democrats are having a meltdown. Jen Psaki, I'm going to quote her soon. She's having a total meltdown over this. They're like, they recognize, all the polls show this, that with RFK not in the race, Biden has a much, much better shot. RFK siphons so many votes away from Biden. But, you know, I was thinking, it's so irrational, right? Why would you vote for a third party candidate, right? Let's say you don't like Trump, right? So if you vote for RFK, or you stay home, like, what difference does it make? I mean, if you want to stay home, stay home, right? But if you're going to vote for Trump or for Biden, either one, right? You want Biden to win, you vote for RFK, right? It makes no sense. It's just a wasted vote. So voting for RFK is the same as staying home. Why would you go to the polls and then vote for RFK? It makes no rational sense. So let's say, like I said, there's no, and it happened with Ross Perot. So it's happened in the past. But let's just say that somebody decides, you know what? I'm not voting for Trump. I was going to vote for Biden, but RFK is in the race. I'm going to vote for RFK, right? Makes no sense, because RFK is not going to win. So it's a wasted vote. Why not just stay home? A vote for RFK is, in that situation, is a vote for Trump. And then it hit me. No, it does make sense, because I don't think they're as irrational as you think. Somebody who is ready to vote for Biden, but then votes for RFK, he doesn't really want to vote for Biden. He knows that Biden is a terrible, terrible president. That's what's going on. So they really deep down want Trump. Because again, most people realize that RFK is not winning. There's a few, you know, people out there who are delusional. You realize RFK is not winning. Why are you voting for RFK? Just stay home, right? Or if you want Biden, vote for Biden. The answer is they really deep down want Trump, but emotionally they cannot pull the lever for Trump. They can't bring themselves to do it. That's what's happening. Biden's policies are a disaster. He's the worst president. The country is in shambles. The economy, the border, etc. Iran, the nuclear deal, you know, Ukraine, Russia, everything. So, you know, so they're stuck. They're like, wow. Rationally speaking, Biden is a terrible president. How on earth can I vote for him? But I can't vote for Trump. Emotionally, they just can't bring themselves. They're just so disgusted by Trump's mean tweets and by January 6th. So by default, they stay home. And instead of staying home now, or they go and they vote for Biden because emotionally, they just, that's the only option they feel they can do. But they hate it. They hate themselves for it. And now RFK gives them an out. So it's like they convince themselves that they're voting for RFK because he's not like Trump. He's a better person, whatever. And it's a silly mind game. It's irrational. But that's what I think is going on. I think most people who vote for RFK instead of Biden, if it ends up happening, obviously we have to see how it plays out. Or in 1992, people who voted for Ross Perot and thus took away votes from Bush, they didn't like Clinton for whatever reason, but they didn't think Bush was a good president. They didn't think he was good for the country. So whatever Clinton's issues were, I did not like Clinton. I totally understood not voting for Clinton, but like, why would you vote for Perot? Makes no sense. But I think that's the answer in reverse. Again, when I'm not getting into Bush and Clinton, I would have preferred people vote for Bush over Clinton back in 92, but we're not going to rehash that one right now. We've got certainly enough going on today. Jen Psaki had a meltdown. She agrees that RFK Jr. is a huge, huge problem for Biden's reelection campaign. But here's what she says. She says, they don't understand. They don't know RFK's policies. She's like, if they knew that RFK was an anti-vaxxer, they would never vote for RFK over Biden. They just are voting for the Kennedy name. And she's totally wrong about this, but it shows you where the Democrats are on this. She, of course, is an MSNBC anchor. And she says, it's a name recognition, she says. She says they don't know that RFK is an anti-vaxxer and a conspiracy theorist. They don't know that. They just know he has the name Kennedy, so they would choose him over Biden. So therefore, if he's on the ballot in swing states, that's a problem for Biden. She's right and she's wrong. She's right that it's a huge problem for Biden, but they may know or they may not know his conspiracy theorists and his anti-vax. I mean, RFK is very extreme in a lot of ways. He knows a lot. You know, he's got a lot of knowledge and trivia and stuff in his head. And he knows a lot of facts and whatever, but like he's bizarre. A lot of his views are bizarre. But I don't think people care. People just want him to fix the economy and want him to close down the border, you know, and secure the border. And he wants to do those things. Whether he will or not, I have no idea. He's not going to win. It doesn't matter. But that's not the point. The point is that people don't care about the conspiracy theories and about the anti-vaccine. That's what Jen Psaki doesn't understand. Oh, they would never vote for him over Biden. Yes, they would, because the economy stinks, because the border has millions of illegals coming across, because the world is on fire, because you got the war in the Middle East and Biden throwing Israel under the bus. Some people certainly care about that. Some Americans and Russia and Ukraine and Putin and China, and things are in shambles. It's a disaster. It's a nightmare. So, but RFK, he doesn't like vaccines. Nobody cares if RFK likes vaccines, but RFK is a conspiracy theorist. But Trump's mean tweets, nobody cares. Jen Psaki's the only one who cares about this stuff. People care about their pocketbooks, about their bank accounts, about how expensive everything is and how unhappy they are and how immoral the country has become. That's what they care about. Not anti-vaxxers. All right. I got to play you this clip. Karim Jean-Pierre appeared on a radio show and, they grilled her. They asked her, I guess you'd call it tough questions, not too tough for most people, but, really honestly fair questions, which are, is Joe Biden, does he have dementia? Does he have cognitive decline? And what about the economy and what about inflation? Now you would think she would be expecting those. She hung up on this radio host, which is fascinating. And I want you to ask yourself, why does she not hang up on people in the White House? I mean, the answer is kind of obvious, but, it's pretty amazing. She literally, her whole job is to answer questions. She's not very good at that. And she hung up on this talk show host. I'm going to play this clip. This was WBT in Charlotte, North Carolina. Listen to this clip.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her? does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
No. You're taking us down this rabbit hole. Let me be very clear about this. For the past several years, the president's physician has laid out very in a comprehensive way the president's health. This is a president, if you watch him every day, if you really pay attention to his record and what he has done, you will see exactly how focused he's been on the American people, how historic his actions has been. And so I'm not even going to take the premise of your question. I think it is incredibly insulting, and so we can move on to the next question.
Gas prices and grocery prices, then, big topics here in North Carolina. How does Mr. Biden win votes when people don't have as much disposable income?
Look, the president understands. He grew up in a middle class family, a working class family in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He gets it. He understands how difficult it is for Americans who are sitting around their kitchen table every month trying to figure out what they're going to pay for. You have to remember when the president walked into this administration, there were multiple crises happening. There was COVID. There was the economy was in a tailspin because of the last administration, because of what the President Trump left us with. Now you're asking me about gas prices. The president took action on gas prices. Let's not forget Russia's invasion on Ukraine skyrocketed prices of gas. And because the president took action, we are in a different place than we were a year ago on gas prices. Eggs, milk, seafood products, all the important groceries, those costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow.
And she hung up.
Wow.
Hung up. She hung up the phone on him. Have an amazing day. Number one, she had nothing to say. Cognitive decline. She got insulted, and then she started quoting the president's doctor, which is absurd. And then he asked her about gas, and she got, she took offense at it and talked about how unfair it was to ask such a question, which is on everybody's mind. And then, and gas prices, she tells lie after lie because prices have not gone down. Gas prices are slightly down, but they were sky high and still continue to be, and groceries are totally high, sky high, and have not gone down one bit. But that's not even the issue, and then she just goes and says thank you and hangs up. Now, what happens normally? And she's flustered, and it's unlistenable. It's cringeworthy to listen to her. And then she blames Putin, and then she blames Trump on the economy, and then blames Putin, and acts like Biden. And then she says she has nothing to say. So she says, "Oh well, Biden feels it. Biden feels the pain." Well, thank you. That's very helpful to us to know that Biden feels the pain. So it's just cringeworthy to listen to her from start to finish, not utter a simple something even semi-intelligent. But what's incredible is she hung up on him. She hung up on him because she couldn't handle a tough question. Now, she gets asked tough questions when she's at the White House, right? When she does press briefings, not from too many of these, softball lobbying reporters, but from Steve Doocy and others. And what does she do? See, she doesn't hang up on them. She goes to the next question. All she has to do is read from a little script in front of her and then move on to the next question. Kind of like what Biden does. Okay. So she doesn't have the pressure of being forced. You can't, what are you supposed to do here? Next question. Let me go to the next reporter. Let me go to the next person. You're stuck here. She's stuck on the phone with this person. She has no idea how to answer a question. And unlike at the White House, she's not in control of the mic because there's someone on the other end who's asking her the question. So she's stuck. So there's nothing for her to do other than hang up on him. And then I was thinking, well, maybe she had a legitimate reason. Maybe she needed to go somewhere. Maybe she just had to hang up, right? And first of all, it's very rude. But one thing I know is Karine Jean-Pierre, she did not have to go to a Mensa meeting. That's not where she was headed. She did not have to go to do some math equations, right? She didn't have to go to her calculus class. She didn't have to go and write up her PhD or to take an IQ test, right? All those things we know we can rule out. That was not where Karine Jean-Pierre was headed. So I thought that was a pretty fascinating clip. All right, Rona McDaniel, former head of the RNC, and of course she has stepped down, and Trump has installed his own people, including Lara Trump. Rona McDaniel was hired by NBC News as a contributor. That was a good move by NBC News. And then she was promptly fired. Okay, they gave her a big contract. She did like one interview on Meet the Press. She might get paid an awful lot for that interview because I assume that, you know, there's a contract there that they still have to fulfill. But she's making like something like $300,000 a year. I believe it was a two-year contract, but that's not the point. The point is that NBC, the news anchors, Chuck Todd, Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski, others, they, you know, what's her name, Rachel Maddow, they were livid. They spoke out and they slammed. They ripped the executives at NBC News to shreds and said, you never consulted with us. We don't want to have anything to do with her. We don't want to interview her. She is fake and a fraud and gaslights and everything else. And they just ripped Rona Daniels to shreds and said, you've got to get rid of her. And NBC News said, all right, we'll get rid of her. We'll listen to, we'll cave into the pressure. Now, they hired her. There are a couple of points you got to realize. Number one, it's so disgraceful. You have all these NBC reporters. They are news reporters. Some of them are analysts, right? Some of them are pundits. They're allowed to have an opinion. Chuck Todd, he's the head of the political division. He's supposed to be objective, okay? Chief political analyst, whatever they call him. There's a bunch of people here in the news division who are supposed to be objective. So not only do they wear it on their sleeves, they say, we censor out somebody who we don't agree with. Get them out. We don't want them on our network. Like, think about how could anybody ever trust NBC News? Not that we ever would, but there's people out there who do. How could any rational thinking human being, intelligent, semi-intelligent human being say, you know what, I'm going to trust NBC reporting the news when they say, oh, you hired a Republican? Let's silence her. Now, above that, she is not a MAGA Republican. No, this is not Steve Bannon, okay? This is not, even Kevin McCarthy or, you know, Jim Jordan or somebody who's like super conservative or Ron DeSantis. This is Rona McDaniel. She's as swampy as they get. There's a reason that Trump pushed her out. Okay, nobody has ever equated her. She did not do enough when they rigged the election in 2020. She's never done enough to help Trump out. So, you know, you can argue, you know, she and Trump supposedly get along, but there's friction. But she's not somebody who spouts conservatism, okay? She's a moderate, middle-of-the-road, swamp Republican. So the fact that they got rid of her, it just tells you everything you need to know. It's not like they got rid of somebody. And Fox News has Juan Williams, okay? I don't believe in silencing people you disagree with. Juan Williams, to me, I've never heard him utter something even remotely intelligent, okay? The man is... He sounds like he's from Mars. When he makes points on Fox News, he's a big liberal. Fox News has him on as a contributor. They used to have Alan Combs. They've had other liberals, other Democrats. And you want to hear them talk. I think they make a fool of themselves. I don't think they make intelligent points. I still want them on Fox News. I want people to be able to hear. I want you to show us different perspectives and let the viewer decide. But NBC News doesn't want to do that. They want to control the narrative and they want to silence anything that isn't exactly fully in line with their point of view, which is the woke leftist point of view. And it's just astonishing. And the NBC News executive said, all right, you want to be a super liberal network and you want to silence anybody, not even a conservative, because I don't even call Rona McDaniel a conservative, but you want to silence anybody who doesn't fully agree with you. Okay, we'll cave in and we'll do that, which is disgraceful on every level. Meanwhile, Marco Rubio, we mentioned that his name has been thrown into the mix. Again, some people are telling me that it's going to be Tim Scott. I just really don't believe it's going to be Tim Scott. Mark Rubio is from Florida, so you have the same issue electorally that you'll have with Ron DeSantis. So maybe Trump takes up permanent residence somewhere else. I don't know if he chose Rubio, how they'd work that out. But I'm sure, you know, obviously they're not going to lose Florida, so they'll figure something out. You've got, we've told you about Stefanik and I guess Kirsty Noem. There's a bunch of really, really strong names in the mix. No, it's not going to be Nikki Haley. Oh, by the way, last show, I believe I said, I mentioned Nikki Haley a couple of times. I got it right. And then I said Nancy Pelosi, which was the same mistake that Trump made. And they accused him of being in cognitive decline. It does get confusing when you're talking about Nikki and Nancy and the names are similar enough. And especially I'm not great with names. You know, I force myself to focus when I'm doing this show, obviously, but names in general are not my thing. There's details there. I try to focus on other things. You know, names are more fluid. You know, you don't need to focus on them as much, in my opinion. But either way, Nikki Haley is not going to be the running mate. I don't believe DeSantis is going to be the running mate. Vivek, they already have come out. Vivek Ramaswamy, he's not going to be the running mate. No surprise there. Trump is going to want somebody. Like I've said, the VP, the running mate, cannot help you, but it can harm you. That's my opinion. It's been proven for many years. It's not going to gain you a lot of votes, or if any, but you can lose votes if you make the wrong choice. You need to pick somebody who's nice and safe. And, Rubio, I think he would be just a really, really solid pick. What's amazing is Jonathan Carl on ABC News, he interviewed Rubio Sunday. He asked Rubio, he said, there's rumors about you possibly being chosen. Would you accept it, and be the nominee, Trump's nominee, Trump's, running mate and VP nominee? And Rubio said, of course, I would serve my country. And Jonathan Carl treated him, like he was from Mars, and he was so shocked and taken aback and said, really? But you would run with Trump? But what about, and this is what's amazing, they're living in this delusional fantasy world that they dream up where how could anybody rational? I thought Marco Rubio is a rational person, but obviously I'm wrong because he would agree to run as Trump's VP. And Rubio put him in his place and wiped the floor with him, ripped him to shreds. Here's Jonathan Carl, I believe that's who it was on ABC's This Week. He said, don't you know what Trump did to his last VP? Don't you know what he did to Mike Pence? They were chanting, hang Mike Pence. On January 6th, he pressured Mike Pence to not certify the results. And they were yelling and chanting, hang Mike Pence. And Trump was just standing there, and he was egging them on. So how could you want somebody? And they look at Trump as like this horrible person. And how could you possibly want to be his VP? Look what he does to his VPs. As though like Trump is going to basically go and lynch Mark Rubio. And Rubio says back, he's like, hello. He's like, look at his record. Look at the economy. Look at how safe the country was. Look at Ukraine. Look at Israel and Gaza. Look at the border. Look at crime. Like every metric over here, Biden has the worst record we've ever seen, and Trump has the best. How could you not want to run with Trump? And that's what he said. And John DeCarlo, then he pushes back and he says, you're blaming, Rubio said, he said that Putin never invaded Ukraine under Trump. And Carl says back, you think that has something to do with Trump? The fact that Russia never invaded Ukraine? And Rubio's like, yeah, Trump, what do you mean? Like, he literally, he stocked Ukraine with so many weapons that Russia was terrified to attack. Like, Trump defended them. Hello? And they don't get it. They're just so deranged. It's just astonishing. All right, so Trump had one big win in the court this week, as I said, where they literally, this Judge Engoron, who cannot stand Trump. Now, Trump has been very vocal in his criticism of Engoron, but he's right. He's right. Letitia James, she made it her political jihad to bring Trump down. And that's exactly what she's done. And this trial is a total farce. The trial is a farce. Trump did not cook the books. Even if he did cook the books, it would be a victimless crime. But like I said, it's a victimless non-crime. And Engoron and Letitia James teamed up to crush Trump. And by the way, the Democrats, they are getting so frustrated because Trump has been managing to delay all these court trials, all these court cases. Democrats got their timing all wrong, again, because they underestimated Trump and his legal team. And they thought, oh, we're going to be able to push all this stuff through. And now people are upset. They're upset at Merrick Garland. They're upset at a lot of these prosecutors. Why didn't you file these lawsuits against Trump a year earlier, charge him with these crimes a year before? And they were trying to time it just right. They wanted it to happen after the primaries. So Trump's already, and of course, it's totally backfiring on them, which is just extremely fun and entertaining to watch, because other than the Alvin Bragg trial, which is a joke, none of these trials are going to happen before Election Day. So it's totally backfiring against the Democrats. But either way, they ruled that Trump needed to put up a $464 million bond, $500 million bond almost. And they came up with some kind of, it was literally fabricated. The numbers, they decided that's how much Trump inflated it by. And then they added interest for like another 80 or 100 million. I mean, they literally just wanted to make it impossible. She wanted to be able to seize and confiscate Trump's assets and Trump's properties. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to bankrupt Trump and take away his power to do business. And by the way, a lot of business people are afraid to do business in New York anymore, buy property or anything else, because if this is a possibility, who says it's not going to happen to them? So that's another fascinating side point, that New York is getting really hurt by this because people don't want to invest in New York State anymore. Why should they when there's so many other states where you don't have these radical leftist prosecutors who are out to get you if you're successful and if you're a Republican? And I understand you'll say, well, it's just Trump, it's not the others. How do you know? Okay, wait until they come for you. So either way, an appeals court stepped in and took it down from $460 million to $175 million, which Trump has available and he's able to lay out. And the appeals court recognized that it was just totally, totally out of hand and outrageous. and just totally unfair the way they're treating Trump. So that was a big win for Trump. He has that money. He's going to put it down. He's not going to lose any of his properties. Meanwhile, in the Alvin Bragg trial, just a quick update, it is scheduled to start April 15th. Trump's lawyers are pushing back because what happened was SDNY, the Southern District of New York, which is it's under the DOJ. It's a federal U.S. attorney. They dumped 100,000 documents relevant to the trial. The trial has to do with Michael Cohen and payments that were made and campaign finance violations. It is a bogus, bogus trial, and there's almost no doubt. It's in New York City. That's the only reason there's even a question, but there's almost no doubt that Trump is going to be acquitted of these bogus, fake charges. But either way, they dumped 100,000 documents that are relevant to this that were subpoenaed by Trump's attorneys. They're calling it a major discovery violation where you have to share all the documents. This is the Southern District. This is not Alvin Bragg. If it's a local city trial being brought by Alvin Bragg, the woke leftist prosecutor in New York City, but the Southern District, the DOJ, the federal prosecutors, they had information that was relevant, and they dumped 100,000 documents just a couple of weeks ago, and now they have to have it all prepared by April 15th. And Alvin Bragg is saying, well, there's only 300 documents out of those 100,000 that are relevant to the trial, so what are you worried about with 100,000 documents? And Trump's lawyers are saying, listen, we can't accept your word for that. Thank you, saying there's only 300 documents. We've got to go through each of these documents, so it's very unfair. And it is possible, Trump is appealing it. It is possible that the trial will get delayed, but as of now, it's scheduled for April 15th. But again, Trump's not very concerned about this trial, although obviously they want enough time to be able to be ready. All right, let's talk about the UN resolution. Let's talk about Israel. So obviously a lot of friction right now. We're seeing Biden's true colors. He is putting enormous pressure. He has thrown Israel and Bibi Netanyahu completely under the bus. And what happened was the United States actually tried to put forth a resolution in the UN demanding a ceasefire. And the United States, their resolution wasn't strong enough for Russia and China. Russia and China vetoed it. But that resolution would have been a disgraceful resolution for the United States to be putting forth and proposing, which was basically demanding that Israel agree to a permanent ceasefire in return for the release of all the hostages. Now, there's a couple of problems with this. I don't even need to explain it. I mean, it's just a disgrace what the United States and what Biden are doing to Israel. I never in my wildest dreams thought that it would go this far. I'm not shocked because it's Biden and I knew he never liked Israel, but it is quite it's disturbing and egregious. And what happened was, number one, you're directing your resolution to the wrong people. Okay, let's say somebody says that, you know, it's not fair, the humanitarian, the civilian lives, the casualties, and we told you how far Israel, the length Israel's going to avoid civilian casualties in Gaza. But let's say you feel bad about every two-year-old in Gaza, all the women and children, all the innocent people. We don't trust Hamas's bogus numbers of how many casualties, but let's say you feel bad about the civilian casualties in Gaza. Okay, it's Hamas's fault. Every single one of those civilian casualties, they're on one group, Hamas, period. Israel is just doing it in self-defense. It's Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. But on that note, right, you have a resolution saying free all the hostages. It's untenable. Israel is saying, listen, first release all the hostages, then we'll have a conversation about the ceasefire. You're saying, they're making this like it's about Israel. That's the disgraceful part. Making it's about Israel. We have a resolution. Israel should agree to a ceasefire. If Hamas releases all the hostages, well, that's a big if. And Hamas is refusing to release even some of the hostages right now, the ones that are remaining in captivity. So that's absurd. That's not on Israel. That's on Hamas, and they're making it to be about Israel. That to me is the most disturbing part. But aside from that, the fact the United States is demanding that Israel agree to a permanent ceasefire under any circumstances, and Israel not have the sovereign right to dismantle and destroy Hamas after everything that's gone on, it's just a disgrace. And then China and Russia, that wasn't strong enough. So China and Russia vetoed that, and then they put forth their own resolution, and their resolution calls for a permanent ceasefire without any preconditions, which obviously is insane and ludicrous. And Biden and the United States, they abstained. They did not veto it. They abstained. Okay? Bibi Netanyahu responded. He canceled. There was a delegation of Israeli diplomats who were traveling to Washington, D.C. to meet with Biden. And Bibi said, we're canceling that. I'm sorry. You know, this is not how friends treat each other. Now, he did it to send a message to Biden. He also told, I guess, Senator Rick Scott of Florida, Bibi, that he did it to send a message to Hamas. And like, hey, we are not agreeing to any sort of ceasefire. But listen, I'm going to say this again. It is mind-numbing, okay? Prior to the Hamas massacre, Israel was one of the good guys, mostly, in the world, in their global standing. Israel had a lot of friends. Israel had a lot of support. India, China, Russia, the United States, okay? There were no calls for a two-state solution. There were no accusations of genocide. Israel, for the first time since 1948, prior to this horrific terror attack, Israel had good standing. They had global support. There was peace with Bahrain, with the Emirates, even with the Saudis. Israel was in good shape, okay? What happened? What changed all of that? Now Israel's being accused of genocide. Think about this. Following this horrific, horrific massacre where Israel was the victim, continues to be the victim, where Hamas and Iran are the bad guys, Israel suffered something incomprehensible, painful, brutal, unimaginable, unthinkable. And what happens now? Now Israel is genocidal. 6 months ago, Israel was the friend. Israel was one of the good guys. There was peace being made all over the Middle East. And now Israel is being treated like dirt. Israel is being treated like they are worse than Iran and North Korea because they were the victims of this horrific attack. It's incomprehensible, okay? And I did not see this. I mean, the treatment they are getting is just so incredibly, incredibly sickening and despicable. And I saw it coming, but I didn't see it coming. And let me explain that. Hamas, they knew this would happen. They were banking on it. Iran, they saw this. Okay, this was their strategy, 100% their strategy, and it's playing out basically the way they wanted it to play out. Because I sat there, right after the attack, I was shell-shocked, and I said to myself, this is Hamas committing suicide. Okay, I guess they realize they cannot win, so this is suicidal. They carry out this attack. They know they're going to be dismantled. Then I thought, all right, maybe they're banking on Israel not following through. Because I knew. I was like wavering. I've been hesitant from day one. Will Israel be able to really follow through? So I said to myself, all right, Hamas, they're kind of hoping, yeah, they're done. That's it. They're finished. But they're kind of hoping maybe Israel doesn't get, but what do they gain? What do they gain? Okay, it's one attack. I understand that to them. The martyrdom, that's a big deal. But no, it's got to be part of a bigger strategy, a bigger master plan. And they're exposing their atrocities and they're live streaming it with their cameras and everything, showing the world what kind of animals they are, you know. So what is Hamas doing? Why are they doing this, right? Why is Iran doing this? And, you know, isn't this going to turn all the momentum against Iran, against Hamas, right? That was my thought. And what I didn't realize, okay, between George Soros and between Iran and between all the people on the left, they've been spending so much money creating so many Hamas sympathizers all around the world. The left is pro-Hamas. The left is pro-Hamas. There is so much Jew hatred that after this horrific, it makes no logical sense. It is totally contradicts any kind of logic, any kind of reason. Prior to the attack, Israel is one of the good guys. Now that Israel is defending itself and Israel suffered this unthinkable attack, now Israel is one of the bad guys? It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. It's insanity. We are witnessing something that is totally nonsensical. And it's because Iran, they managed to totally turn the tide and somehow Israel's the victim of this horrific, horrific attack. And 5 months later, Israel is now worse than Hamas, and Hamas are the good guys to so many millions of people around the world, and the UN and all these countries, and to Biden. It is really, really, it is totally incomprehensible. I don't know how else to say it. Now, meanwhile, Ayatollah Khamenei praised Hamas, and listen to what he said. He literally said this, and he's 100% right. I hate to say it. You know, he's a disgraceful, despicable animal, but a monster, subhuman, but he's right. Ayatollah Khamenei, he praised Ismail Haniyeh, the Hamas leader, for rallying international support for the Palestinians. He says Hamas's propaganda has outshone Israel's efforts to garner global backing. By the way, Israel fired Ilan Levy, who has been this incredibly powerful spokesman, and I'm very upset about that because it seems like they did it for political reasons. Netanyahu didn't like him or Netanyahu's wife, and what are you doing? Israel needs all the PR it can get, and he was one of the best we've ever seen. Meanwhile, Iranian President Khamenei said, quote, despite the enemy's wishes, it has turned Palestine into the world's number one issue. Unbelievable. He's right. It's chilling. Ibrahim Raisi, Iran's president, he echoed the sentiment. He said the people of the world hate the criminal Zionist regime and love the oppressed people of Gaza. Today, with the fierce resistance and standing of the oppressed and powerful people of Gaza, the issue of Palestine has gone beyond the Islamic world, has become the issue of the world of humanity. This is what he said. Raisi also accused Arab countries that normalized relations with Israel of being left with egg on their face. And he called Israel's war against Hamas the largest genocide in world history. So they're telling you their playbook, and it's 100% accurate, and it's very, very disturbing. but it's still true. Okay, Ayatollah Khamenei said that look at what they've managed to do. Hamas has made Palestine the number one issue that the world is concerned about. Again, they were dead in the water. You want to say, well, part of this is because Trump and Kushner marginalized the Palestinians and made them a non-issue? Okay, maybe. But you got Raisi saying, they're both saying this. They're saying, oh, look, they're saying the world is has now turned, the issue of Palestine is not just a localized issue in the Middle East. The entire world now, the entire humanity, they're all focused on the Palestinians and the plight of Palestine and the Palestinian people. That's what they call it. They call it Palestine. It's the wrong label, but I'm just using their label. And that's what happened here, is that the entire world right now is standing up, defending the Palestinians against the genocidal Israelis. That's it. That was their playbook. That was their strategy from day one. I didn't think it could play out as much as it is, and it really is terrifying. Sorry, not to scare everybody there and be alarmist. All right, $1.2 trillion spending bill. Wow, I mean, there's just so much here, but we don't have time, but of course, the Senate and the House passed the $1.2 trillion spending bill, 1,000-page bill. And here we go. Speaker Mike Johnson working with the Democrats as opposed to the Republicans. The majority of Republicans voted against this bill. This is a disgrace, okay? And you're going to defend Mike Johnson. Well, he had to do it. He has no choice. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's actually going to try to put forth a motion to vacate. So they're going to try to do what they did to McCarthy. It's not going to work because she needs the Democrats. The Republicans are not going to vote out. You need every Republican to vote out Mike Johnson. Not going to happen. Plenty of Republicans like Mike Johnson. And the Democrats, they're the ones who did it last time with Matt Gaetz to ouster Kevin McCarthy, but they like Mike Johnson. I don't think the Democrats are going to get rid of Mike Johnson because he's busy working with them. We'll wait and see if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. So it's not going to go anywhere. But this bill passed the House 286 to 134. Most Republicans voted against this bill. Okay, 112 Republicans in the House voted against this bill, 22 Democrats, okay? Only 101 members of the Republican Party voted in favor of this $1.2 trillion spending bill. So it was more Democrat than Republicans. It's like going back to the days of Paul Ryan and John Boehner, where the Republicans control the House, and yet they're passing a Democrat bill, okay? The Republicans, the majority, voted against this bill. That's what's so egregious here. And, well, he doesn't have a choice. What's he supposed to do? Shut down the government. He's supposed to shut down the government, okay? Why is everyone so afraid to shut down the government except for Trump? You're afraid of the backlash. You're afraid of the bad press. So you're doing things that are horrible for the country. It's not just about the $1.2 trillion, okay? They're spending is out of control, and it increases inflation. So, and there's $34 trillion debt and there's a huge deficit. You got to cut the spending. But it's not even about the spending because you're working with the Democrats. Meanwhile, inflation's out of control. The border's out of control. You know, things are a mess, okay? You haven't sent money to Israel still. They sent a little bit of money in this, but that was the yearly money, but not the extra money. And this is your leverage. The one leverage Mike Johnson has, they need to pass a budget. And if he shuts down the government, he's going to get all sorts of backlash. I mean, they are going to demonize him. But guess what? He's going to have leverage. Democrats and Biden, they are going to be forced to come to the table and to make concessions. So I'm sorry. It's a disgrace. And I'm not saying that they should vacate him because all the Republicans, this is just how it rolls. Like, I don't know. I give up. I'm tearing my hair out over here. I mean, if they vacate him, so who's going to take over? Someone else is going to end up doing this, unless it's Jim Jordan. I don't believe Jim Jordan would ever do this. He would shut down the government. So, you know, but who knows that I don't think Jim Jordan would ever really get elected speaker. But hey, you never know. Crazier things have happened. All right. There was a caller about the bar exam thing, but I think we're going to have to leave it right there. It's been long, and hopefully it's been fun and entertaining and informative, I hope. And, you know, if you have any feedback, of course, you can always send me an email, josh@vinnews.com, josh@vinnews.com. That's going to do it for today, and we will see you next time.